The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Monday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, it is freaking cold today.
It's like day one at Cumberland. It was 70 when I left the house, and it was 36 when I got down to the studio in Moore, raining sideways, and it's supposed to get down to 17. So it is winter. The first winter blast has arrived in the... Where are we? Are we central? Are we Midwest? Are we South? What do you consider
Southwest.
Central Oklahoma? Southwest?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the grand scheme of things.
Okay. Well, there's the first winter
central,
blast through
lower
the Southwest.
Central. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, you can't... Are we Southwest or are we Lower Central?
Both. A lot of weather people, you know, they say that both ways. Anyway, folks, we have a great week this week. Today we're going to have Bradley Hallman in studio, and then tomorrow we're going to have Randy Howe on, and he makes his annual appearance to talk about his special event that he has going on.
Yeah, King's Home. I think they're doing the boat giveaway as well, where you have an opportunity for a donation. I think I've gotten all that lingo down over the years as far as what it legally is, a donation to have a chance to win his... King's Home Triton. So we're gonna have him on. I think I have to get back with him after the show. He's a busy man, traveling a lot. So I think in between haircuts he's gonna jump on the phone, and so we're not gonna have him on Skype, but I think we'll get him on the phone, and then he's got to hop on a plane, making it our second guest in 2 weeks who's got to hop on a plane.
And then on Wednesday, I'm working on a couple of things. I did receive an email from an individual that is one of the 30 people that Al McCullough referenced on our show on Thursday about the NPFL.
The TNPFL, remember.
Oh, yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
That's the Nigerian Professional Football League, Mark. It's the TN, the National Professional
Good
Fishing
point.
League.
Good point. And I apologize. I don't know his name. I can't remember. I printed it off. I asked him to send me his contact info, and we're going to try him. He said he wanted to come on the show and talk about it. So I thought that would be very interesting. And then I'm working on one other thing. Now, I do want to let everybody know, a lot of people really, really liked the Zell Rowland show that we had last week. I have confirmed next week, not this week, but next week, two guests. We're going to have Scott Canterbury on to talk about his season, winning the Angler of the Year. Yep. And then our second book guest for next week, Mr. Larry Nixon.
Impressive. Man, we could have used Zell in the second half of the OU game for that arm for a drive to keep it going.
Yeah. So next week, Larry Nixon, and can't wait to hear some of the stories that Larry has. And once again, I think a lot of the young listeners that we have just are not familiar with what Larry Nixon has done in this industry.
He's done everything.
Yeah.
Literally done everything. You sent me a cool text last week that got me chuckling. It was a picture of this. For those of you listening on iTunes, you know the Columbus Barrel Company there in Ohio. They do a lot of stuff with OSU. I'll give them a pass on that. They are a pretty good team this year. But they basically take the oak bourbon barrels and then they laser etch it and cut it and turn it into all sorts of stuff. I still say for wedding favors for your son Mark, you need to hit him up. You could probably do some really cool stuff. But one of the things they do is called the Big Stick, which is like a, what do they call that, a slat? What is it, the side of the barrels, the little
slat, I think.
Anyway,
I'm not sure.
And then they turn it into a big bottle. Well, after your debacle last week opening the sparkling apple cider, we have a Columbus Barrel Company Big Stick bottle opener, but they engraved on it the BTL logo, which is cool, and then it says for studio use only.
It's gonna hang up right there where everybody in the studio knows where it is. So a big thanks to them for sending that to us.
I mean, they had we got no skin in the game of this. They're just good dudes who like the show. So go check their stuff out. Columbus Barrel Company, if you're in Ohio, like I said, they got cool Ohio State stuff. Not very applicable outside of Buckeye Nation for that.
There's a lot of Buckeye Nation across the U.S., man.
I know.
A lot of alumni, my aunt and uncle,
but they also live in Ohio. Yeah. So.
Yeah. All right. One other thing I want to mention real quick. I sent out the Sunline Hotline prize packs. I sent those out on Saturday.
I don't even have any of that. What is it called? Dash Strike? It's chatterbait line or bladed jig line, right?
Yeah, I don't even
have any of that stuff.
Yeah, so I sent those out on Saturday. I apologize for not getting those in the mail before then. I was just swamped last week with the four shows and everything else I had going on from a bowling standpoint and basketball and all the other stuff, but they went out. But there is one name, and I will have that name tomorrow. I forgot to do it this morning. There was one person that I do not have their contact info.
They didn't send it to you, or you
lost
it?
They didn't send it to me. No.
Oh, okay.
Because so I put all the emails in a file. So if you do not get your Sunline Hotline package by, I'd say, Wednesday, let me know. Just shoot me an email. And then tomorrow on the show, I'll have the name of the one person that did not send me their contact info. So those went out on Saturday. All right. New week. And we have received, what, Matthew? Numerous comments, emails.
Like we always do after every show. Yeah. We get private messages, emails, comments, and then obviously messages on the YouTube page.
Yeah.
And then I get a lot of direct messages for Instagram and Facebook as well.
Yeah. So a lot of people are wanting us to address a particular situation that took place that we did not really talk about it last week. And part of the reason why we didn't talk about it was, number one, we didn't want to take away from the great week that we had doing four shows because I had so many other things going on, and I just really didn't want to go down that path. All right. The second reason of this situation, and I really wanted it to come across, and people, I think when you have situations that occur in this industry and they become personal, I really, really want to respect the individuals that are involved in this situation. Did I listen to it? Yeah. You know, I truly believe there was a lot of emotion involved in there. There was definitely some passion, but I think with the statement being made and the result of it being a personal situation, that it really, I mean, I don't know what was said. I really don't. I don't know.
Listen,
Matthew,
let's put it in context. Let's just lay it out to what it was.
All right.
I'm sitting there fishing the Costa Championship. I get even said, man, did you hear Luke Duncan's podcast? It goes off, talks about some stuff that goes on between him, one of the top guys at MLF. I said, no, I've been fishing, man.
Yeah.
Haven't listened to anything. So I listened to it all the way home. I call. I said, oh, that's crazy. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Cool, gets a lot of spots for it. Have really no opinion on it because, A, I don't really know Luke Duncan. I don't really know Jim Wilburn over at MLF. I haven't really talked to either of them. I've said hi to them both a couple of times.
Yeah.
Never really even occurred to us that we would have to discuss. We come into the studio the next week and we talk about it and say,
yeah.
Never really even occurred to us to bring it up on the show because it was a personal issue, especially with what has gone on between the split, the changes, the things over the last 2 years. There's a lot of personal stuff behind the scenes. And one of the hallmarks of this show, which we've had ample opportunity to talk about personal things on a Bass side, on an MLF side, on an FLW side, but we try to stick to what is fact. Our whole thing when everything this is going down is we stick to what we know that affects us, that affects the
industry. We try to do research.
So we said, do we want to bring this up? Do we want to talk about it? This is before any of this went down. And we said, no, man, that's between Luke and the dudes at MLF. It was obviously a personal issue. I think he had a set of balls to go out and say it on the air like that.
Yeah.
I said, that, no big deal. Well, then all of a sudden, and correct me if I'm saying anything wrong here, we start getting these some comments from some interesting screen names. But
yeah.
What's one of the things we always do on the show, Mark? We address comments. Whether it's you saying a 30th place finish is a failure, whether it's a question that we didn't ask or that we did ask.
Yeah.
So the comments come in. Let me read one of the comments that just came in to just put this in context. We'll put all this to bed then. Right? We on the same same page here so far?
Yep.
I didn't know. You're kind of rambling there, Seth. So I wanted to put
know.
It.
I'm just.
All right. So this is one. And this is people asking why we haven't talked about this situation live on air. And so here's what. Like many have stated before, there is an appearance of MLF protectionism by BTL Live with them not covering things like this, or at a minimum, lends credibility to the claim by both Luke and this week's prominent guest that there are a bunch of scared bobblehead yes men involved in the bass fishing industry that are too frightened to speak up.
Look, folks, I'm going to tell you right now. All right. In the 20 plus years that I have been doing this, never have we ever been influenced to do something or say something or be a bobblehead on this show. Matt and I take a lot of pride in the integrity that has been built in this show and the reputation that we have, having the numerous years being in the trenches on this show and in the industry. It is absurd to think that we are bobblehead puppets.
Let me put it this way. Here's why I agreed with you that we didn't even need to talk about it, because what are we going to talk about as far as that topic is concerned? Hey, someone did a podcast in which it was a personal issue in which their bosses said someone from another organization emailed them about him.
Come on.
The hell do you do with that?
Yeah.
So, I got nothing against Luke Duncan. I got nothing against the MLF side. I got nothing against nobody. And that was horrible English. But it's just one of those deals where it's like, not our gig. And it's his gig. Yeah. And it's a personal issue that we don't know any facts about, so we're not going to talk about it. It's as simple as that. Done. Put it to bed. Move on.
I mean, I would say the vast majority of stuff that we discuss on this show, if we don't know, we try and... I'm just honestly...
Done. Put it to bed. Move on.
All right.
We got a great show coming up today.
We have a great show. We're going to dive into some of the things that went right, some of the things that went wrong with Mr. Hallman's performance
at the Coastal Championship. And folks, if you don't realize right now, Mark gets a little fired up sometimes. In past years, this would have gone drastically different in the conversations. But what you have to understand is you've been doing this for 20 years. It goes back to XM with Gary Giudice, and then the BTL that started for the past 12 to 15 years. You have built BTL, the studio, the Bass Zone, on fair reporting, integrity,
non-bias,
hundreds, thousands of hours of on location, getting the actual story on how it's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that lends credibility and legitimacy to BTL, is you are going to get a fair shake at everything that is going on in the industry. We're not going to be pro anything or anti anything. We're going to tell you what is happening, why it's happening, and should there be information that gives us a opinion, then we're going to state that. If we don't have it, we're not going to state an opinion just to state an opinion without facts or information or non-biased information behind it. That's all it comes down to. So I wanted to kind of speak on that on your behalf, because it's not, you've been called a lot of things by a lot of people, but when you're kind of talking about the integrity, or there's several comments about the whole thing, dude, that's your life. That's my life. That's all I've done since I was 23 years old, straight out of college when I interned for you.
I mean, this is our job.
So
I said it before,
but now we're done. Let's move on. We got big in-studio guests today again back. We're giving the people what they want.
Yeah.
If you read any of the comments, which we do, obviously, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited to have, you know, I've received a ton of emails and comments about how the fans really appreciate Bradley being on this show. And I mean, I've known Brad for a long, long time, and the value that Brad brings to the fans to learn, Matthew, and I think that's the biggest thing, to learn from his experiences, both bad and good, adds so much value to give the fans what they want. I mean, that's what they want. They want to hear both the good and the bad from a performance standpoint. And the insight that Bradley has given over the last few months that he's been a part of the show. The fans greatly, greatly appreciate his contributions to BTL. So
we're going to take a break and bring him back in?
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Phone's ringing. It's MLF telling you what you can and can't talk about with Hallman in the next segment, Mark.
That is crazy.
He's telling you right here. He's saying it here.
Yeah, that is crazy. All right. We're kicking things off on a Monday right here on BTL. I appreciate everybody out there. You guys know that. All right. The fans is really what makes this thing work. So we'll take a break. Come back with Bradley Hallman. Everybody stay tuned.
You are serious about catching fish. That HDS is a dead giveaway. You've got the best fish-finding sonar money can buy. Time to build the ultimate fish-finding system with LiveSight Sonar. See what your lure is doing in real time. Watch fish strike as it happens. See for yourself. Take the LiveSight Sonar 30-day challenge. If LiveSight Sonar doesn't help you find and catch more fish, send it back, no questions asked.
All of us on the Pro Tournament Trail use Gamigatsu hooks.
Why?
Because they are absolutely the best.
It's not about how many bites you get.
It's how many you put in the boat.
Gamigatsu makes hooks for every fishing style.
We didn't come this far to lose fish.
Did you?
For more information, visit Gamigatsu.com.
We've paired one of the most iconic hulls in the history of bass boats with a proven lineup of trusted accessories. We're bringing you best-in-class value and performance, leaving others in your wake. Turnkey value, turnkey performance. The Pantera 2 is an overachiever in the 19-foot category. Once you hit the throttle, you'll feel the rush, and there's no looking back.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're gonna be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it doesn't seem like it likes it as much, but for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm gonna throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong tensile strength that's not gonna give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough it'll get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're gonna slack line them, go shooter.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The name Spro says it all. Spro stands for sports professionals. When you look at the pro staff that Spro has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a Spro bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Hey guys, Cliff Perch here with AFCO. I've got the new Camo Hooded Reaper. It's gonna be a great thing both for fishing and hunting this fall. I can tell you a couple of the features about it. Got the face mask like all the Reapers do, vented in front. It's got the fleece on the inside, so it's really comfortable. It's super warm. When you come down to the pocket, it's got this little snap system called Block Tapey, and it's silent. You know, it doesn't make that sound that other snaps and other systems that hook it together make. Great for hunting, and it's gonna keep that stuff in your pocket.
The SD card's funny.
All right, we are back on a Monday, and we want to welcome our in-studio guest, Mr. Bradley Hallman. Brad, thanks again, man.
Yep, appreciate being
we
here.
We got a lot of blue camo going on. I got a different blue camo on the hat, blue camo on the jacket, a blue camo on the Sunlight hoodie.
I didn't even know that was camo, and I slipped it on. I was walking out of the bathroom, and I caught it in the mirror as I walked out, and I said, ooh, that's got camo for, you
it
know,
is.
Since we're in that season of the year.
It
yeah.
is.
Yep.
All right, Bradley, a lot of people really, really like you taking part in what we do here in studio and giving your take. And I think we kicked things off. Honestly, you got off to a great start at the Coastal Championship. Then day two, obviously something happened. So why don't you kind of break down day one first and then go into what happened on day two?
Well, the reason day two happened was really because of what happened to me during practice at that event, without a doubt. That was we had 4 days of practice at the Coastal Championship this year, and Panger and all of us were there, obviously. The first day of the event was actually the Oklahoma loss. That was Kansas State. I had made it back. I had to get back to my truck. I had to listen to it, and I didn't get away from the boat ramp as soon as I should have. So it was like 3:30 in the afternoon before I finally really went practicing.
Say that again. Brad Hallman, two-time FLW Tour champ, Coastal champ, is sitting in his truck at the Coastal Championship listening to the University of Oklahoma football game.
Right.
It's awesome.
And the wheels were coming off of that train too, right? So
yeah.
We all know. So that was a loss that day. And it just, you know, I end up dumping my boat at 3:30. It gets dark at 6 or 6:30. We had times so we had to be off the water. Does that sound about right? 6:30, 6:45?
Yeah, it was like 6:47 one day.
So basically I've got like 3 hours to fish. And I'm up there at takeoff where we're going out of. Most of the fish come from the bottom end of this lake. Anyway, I run to this creek that historically has been a player on that lake that's within driving distance. I've got about an hour and a half to fish, and I get back there. It's got watercolor, a lot of wood. You saw some guys in the top 10 back there. I threw a spinnerbait and flipped around for maybe an hour and a half, and I had 6 or 7 bites. And no big ones, but good ones. And you could tell that it was – I mean, it was on in there. Lots of bait, but it was going to be found by everyone. Okay, so then fast forward the next 3 days, and this is honest to God truth. Over the next 3 days, I fished down lake and everywhere I was supposed to fish. I caught one bass. I had one bite, and I'm talking daylight till dark over the next 3 days of practice. And I felt like after the first evening, I was like, man, it's going to be a fun week. And to make the issue worse, I have Panger calling me during practice, who is having
it. No, you called me.
Maybe I did.
Yeah, because I was catching him. You don't call people unless you're not catching them. Is that not a true stat?
He doesn't watch the football game the first day, and he's like, dude, I had like 18 pounds. What's my 5 best? Smallmouth on day one of practice and while I was sitting at the ramp. And then I'm staying in the house with Castledine and Upshaw. And Upshaw wins the event, and Castledine does basically what I did as far as the event goes, but style of fishing was different. So I knew what Castledine was doing. Upshaw was much more. Andrew and I are really good friends, but we've never traveled together. So information, you know, it's one of those deals, and all the guys watching will know what I'm talking about. You know, when you're just in a house with a group of guys, there's a couple of them that you've worked with for years, and then there's some that you're just kind of getting to know. And Andrew and I are kind of at that stage. But I could tell Andrew was having a really good week. He was really quiet. He was amazed at the fact that I would come in at the end of the day just madder than hell that I hadn't had a damn bite all day long. And, you know, he's like, you know. He's sleeping in the mornings. The last day of practice, I had a graph issue, and I had to go to the service yard, and I was frustrated that I even had to load up and go do that. and because it takes time out of your day. And I loaded back up at like 10 o'clock in the morning, and Andrew was just getting in the water. He was sleeping. Every morning when I walk out of the house, he was still asleep.
Wow.
That's a sign that the guy's probably on some fish. Yeah. Mm. But anyway, fast forward to the event. I hadn't caught a bass in 3 days, so whenever that thing kicked off, and the weather was incredible day one, wasn't it? I mean, it was probably, I wouldn't say it was the worst I've ever fished in, but with rain and a front hitting, it was
top five.
Without a doubt. I've got it all on my YouTube channel too. I just got done editing that video, and it's about to go up, so it's going to be really good. You can watch it. I mean, it's literally raining sideways, and I'm trying to throw a spinnerbait. It's pretty awesome. But first cast the spinnerbait in the back of that creek, obviously that's where I went, and first cast the spinnerbait, I mean, as soon as I saw that spinner bug in the water, I was like, yeah, they're gonna eat that thing today. And they did. But really, really good first day, caught them really good with spinnerbait. I guarantee you there was no less than 50 boats in the back of that creek.
Holy cow. What'd you have, 14? 13.5, 14 pounds?
Yeah, first day. Mm-hmm. I actually saw Panger after day one. This was kind of funny. He came in and he was so upset. He was literally shaking. I mean, he's in his boat and he's like this.
Not because I was cold.
I was like, what is wrong with you? And he's like, dude, I should have caught him better than this. Like, and I'm like, what do you have? And he's like, I got like 10 pounds. I'm like, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. You end up having 11 something, didn't you?
11 too.
Yeah. So anyway, day two.
Let me put this. Here it is. I've talked to Brad and I'm like, dude, it's easy. I mean, you could catch them cranky. You could catch them on a drop shot.
Right.
Like mid-teens, upper teens. Like I've been catching. Brad's like, I've had one bite in 3 days. And I told someone, I said, watch. I said, Brad's going to jack him because he hasn't gotten bit, so he has no preconceived notions going into the day.
Yeah.
And I felt like an idiot because here I am telling him, oh, yeah, man, I'm probably going to catch him pretty good. Like, I've had such a great practice. And I come in with, like, a measly 11 pounds. And Brad's, like, were you in the top 10?
I think I was in 13th or 14th.
Yeah, Brad was in the top 20. So not only was I pissed that I didn't catch him, I looked like a jackass to everybody that I said I was going to catch him.
I was never thinking that, dude. I would never think that.
I know, but I was thinking that.
When you tell me you caught 18 pounds, I believe you caught 18 pounds. You know, I get it. But... and you weren't the only one.
Yeah.
Castledine and them were telling me the same thing. Like, dude, it was so bad. He was on the phone, on speakerphone, and I had him laying on the phone.
Castledine.
He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, oh, got one now. And so I got this buddy of mine, Dylan Thompson from down at Del Rio, this 18-year-old kid, which is another story, great kid, practicing with me. And it was so bad by the end of the third day, Todd's on the phone at some point, and he's like, ooh, there's another one. There's another one. And Dylan goes, do you think those guys are lying to you? I mean, it was just easy for everybody, but it was not easy for me. And you know, I've been really good at that through the years. Is I'm really good at getting off in left field, and I mean, when I'm out of the ballpark, dude, I am out of the ballpark. And fortunately for me, I did have that creek, which is going to explain to why what happened on day two.
Okay.
So the first day of that event, it blows out, right? I mean, it rains an inch and a half. It's 30 degrees outside, cold, right? The water temperature dropped.
Yeah, and it was dead calm, 72.
Water temperature dropped over 12 degrees in this creek. So the thing's going on, and I knew at the end of day one this was going to happen because the bites were slowing down during day one, along with the pressure and other things. But that creek's going to blow out, and the back of it, the mud's going to come, and then along with the cold weather, it's going to cool the water temperature. Whereas if you're out on the lake fishing like where you were, mm-hmm. you've got 200 foot of depth to warm that lake and to keep it somewhat normal or close to
just for comparison, my water temp dropped 4 degrees.
Right. And ours dropped 12.
Yeah.
12 to 13 back there was the difference on my unit. So,
hang on 1 second. Jerry in Pennsylvania, we're going to get to the SD card. He's like blowing up the instant feedback.
Okay.
So continue,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brian.
Right. Water temp's dropping.
Water temp's dropping.
You're in the top 20 going into day two.
Yeah. And I just don't have anything else to go do. I mean, I have nothing. And it's like, I don't want to just go on a complete whim. I mean, I spent 3 days trying to find that and I couldn't find it. Right. And, so I went back to the creek, and as I'm going, there's a no wake zone that's really big in there, and you can see and you can count boats. And dude, I counted 10 boats going back in there just in the time frame that I was in there. So you know, 40 of them came back or more. And so there was a lot of guys in the same position I was. There were a couple of guys at the end of the day, at the very end of day two. I had one bass, is all I'd caught all day long. Everyone was gone. There were two guys left. One of them, which I knew, had caught 14 pounds in there the day before. And he ended up making the top 10. And then as I went around and kind of got to the very last bit of what I would call the outside of that creek, with about 2 hours left, there was a guy in there working a section that was obviously the best section, and he wasn't moving. So I couldn't really get in there. And I asked him, I said, are you doing any good? And he said, I've got five. And he acted like it was a small five and he wasn't going to do well. Well, that guy ended up making the top 10 too. But out of all 50 guys that were back there, those two guys were the only two that made it that I know of. Huh. You saw some pictures and stuff from the guy from Ohio that did really well in there.
Looked like a different world.
It was a different world back there. You know, the second day of practice, I ran the back of everything I could run, and nothing looked like it, you know.
Wow.
This wasn't the habitat that place had. But it loaded up with too many boats, and it loaded up with really bad weather. If the weather doesn't come like that and it puts off for a couple of days, the back of that thing had the opportunity to win. There was no doubt the population of fish were back there. Now, when I say that, the fact that we were allowed to weigh, this was the big curveball in this tournament. The fact that we could weigh 15-inch smallmouth to 17 7/8-inch smallmouth, which would normally not be keepers on that lake,
right,
really opened the doors for all the guys that were willing to go smallmouth fishing because they weren't having to throw them back. I know Upshaw told me at the end of day one, he had one or two, you know, that wouldn't have kept under normal circumstances. You know, so that takes the largemouth deal kind of away from the power of it away on that lake, because there are some really nice smallmouth way over 18 inches, but catching five of them is difficult.
Yeah. All right, day two.
So day two, I go back in the creek. I mean, it's just cold. They won't eat a spinner bait. I tried flipping. I tried chatter baiting. I tried everything in the entire world to get a bite. I think I had one bite flipping a brush hog at about 10 o'clock. And I just stayed with my guns, thinking that maybe, you know, that it would warm up a little bit, which it did. And the water temperatures crept back up on day two, but I never ran into that stretch. I had a group of fish in there feeding. And so by the end of day two, everyone had left other than the two guys that I saw that made the top 10. And I stayed with it. I never left. I didn't make a cast anywhere except for back there behind that bridge the entire event.
Wow. All right. So what's the scoop on the SD card?
The SD card.
Explain it. So let me just say this. So I'm scrolling through my news feed on Facebook,
right,
and I see a post from Brad Hallman Fishing. It just says, does anybody know this family? And I'm like, wait, what? And I look at it, and it's like, kids holding a koala bear,
yeah.
Like photos on the beach,
golfing with kangaroos.
Yeah, and he's like, it appears that I somehow ended up with an SD card of a family's trip to Australia, right, and I'm sure they'd like it back. So that's what everyone saw. So yeah. I am just as curious. How? What the heck?
So, I was going through my cards, you know, and just like you guys, we've got lots of media cards, whether it's for YouTube stuff or for pictures or whatever. And so there's all these cards, and my wife had actually came to me at some point and thrown down two or three cards and was like, hey, check and see what's on these. I'm expecting, like, you know, pictures from my kids from 10 years ago or something, you know, something really cool that you like looking at. And I slipped this card in, and there's this family. I don't recognize a single person. And there is a lot of pictures on here, and I don't recognize them at all. So I go to my wife, and I'm like, who are these people? And she's like, I have no idea. So I go to my oldest daughter, and I'm like, who are these people? And she says, I have no idea. I've never seen them. And I'm thinking, well, how can there be an SD card in my house of a family on vacation that none of us know? I mean, how is that possible? Like, in my house, in my group of cards. So I thought, I got this idea, I'll put it on social media, because I've got a pretty good you know, outreach, especially here in Oklahoma. And the boy in one picture was wearing an Oklahoma Sooner shirt in one picture. So I was like, I've got a chance at this.
Okay.
So I put it out there. Does anybody know these people? And it rocked on for about a day, and then one of the guys said, hey, my cousin knows who he is, and he tagged me in the deal and their conversation. He wasn't friends with them on Facebook, so he couldn't tag them along into the conversation, but he did know their names, so I looked them up on Facebook, and then I went to the boy is somewhere in his 20s, and he's either at school at Tulsa or recently out of school from Tulsa, and then the mother, the family is actually from UConn. And so I messaged the mother and the son. I have got no response, so I guess they think I'm just some crazy psycho. Like they're scared of it.
Koala bears, huh?
Either that or they just haven't got around to seeing it. But well, it's been up there for...
Hopefully those were the right people with them on vacation.
No, I looked at the Facebook pictures. Yeah. It's definitely the right people.
Huh. How long ago do you think it was? I mean, is it years old or months old or... Is there a card somewhere where there's like, who's this weirdo fishing?
Well, it depends. it depends on the camera. Switched. So like, you know how it comes up when you load pictures, it'll give you dates.
Yeah.
And it was from 2015, 2016, somewhere around New Year's. But if their cameras are like mine, I'll put my stuff in after a picture or a video I just shot, and it's wanting to, you know, because I've never set the date on it.
No, right? I agree. But also, if you're not friends with someone, and I found this because I get a lot of messages on Facebook, then you have to go into Messenger, then you have to click people, then you have to click accept, and then it opens up the message. So it's like five steps. Like a year ago, I opened up, I had like 35 messages that I didn't even know existed.
This happens to me on my daily life. With anything with social media, it's like, ooh, I didn't even know that existed. Yeah. What is that?
Funny. All right. Want to go to the instant feedback. Jared in Wisconsin wants to know, was it easier to catch the smallmouth because of the lifting of the size restriction?
Yeah. I mean, now, when I say easier, you got to understand, I fished for three damn days and caught one of them. And the one that I caught is a great story in itself. I'm going down a bluff wall. I think I told you this. In the morning, it's like second day of practice. I got a spook in my hand. I'm jerking it. And my boat is literally sitting in 50 foot. This is the only bite I got in 3 days, smallmouth. They blow up on the outside of me over 150 foot of water. I'm thinking they're stripers. I turn and fire the spook over there. Nope, it's smallmouth. And that's the only bite I had. So, yes, is it easier? I mean, from a tournament strategy, yeah, it becomes easier because you're taking a group of fish that are normally caught and thrown back in an area, and now all of a sudden you're allowed to put them in a box and take them in. So, you know, we had it for the FLW Tour event that we were there for the last time, and it does. It changes the dynamics of
Wendlet fishing. Probably would have won if it had been a 15-inch limit the first time you guys went there, and he ended up zeroing and had multiple 17.5-inchers.
All right, Dwayne wants to know, do you guys share info? Do you work together?
Matt and I?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't, yeah.
Kind of on a tournament by tournament. Like, I feel like we work on Rayburn.
100%, yeah.
And a little bit here.
I definitely, at Amistad, I tried to help you as much as
I could. Yeah, definitely tried to help me as much. See, I'm still a little, like, in full disclosure, I'm still a little hesitant to try to call or work with Brad because he's at such a different point in his career and already has kind of an established base of guys that he works with.
Mm-hmm.
I
like talking
everything that I'm kind of discovering. He's discovered in like 2003. Like, I mean, I'm just saying, I feel a little hesitant. Like, I don't want to.
Well, I didn't totally understand, you know, I mean, exactly what you were doing at the last Coastal Championship event. And I can honestly tell you, I didn't go spend a lot of time with a drop shot in my hand, even though you told me you were doing that.
Yeah, that was key to me every day. Right. I mean, I caught biggins doing that every day.
I was going to feed them a jig or die. I drug the paint off of probably five different LBJs, like the heads that just
gone.
Lead.
But then when it comes down to it and you look at what Upshaw was doing, he wasn't dragging it.
No.
He was flipping it and hopping it. Like, I would venture to say they might have eaten a tube the same way that they ate that little bitsy jig and the little jig he was doing the way they were fishing.
I had a friend of mine call me and was like, dude, the tube would have stroked him. But I never even thought about it.
Huh. All right. Jerry from Pennsylvania also wants to know, what was the color of the drop shot you were using, Matt? Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember. I'm contemplating on whether or not I want to say it right now. Yeah, it's called
Who cares?
I care. It's called Morning Sunrise.
Okay.
It's just kind of a weird color, and I figured it out because one day they would eat it, and then the next day, you know, you'd get them underneath there, and you'd see them, and you'd see them swim off.
Yeah.
They didn't want any part of it. Like, they hated it. Like, they were very hateful towards the drop shot when you got it around them. You'd see, you know, normally you see your lines kind of match up and they come and they're looking at it. Like, these lines are, like, shooting off like fireworks away from it. So I have a bag of Robo Worms and I went through 10 or 15 different ones and I got to this one that I had a half a pack of left and it was way different than any of the natural or the shad colors or anything, and I put in on. And, like, caught three right off the bat on it. So then I called Travis Manson, who I was also working with, and I was like, dude, you got anything similar to this? You might want to try it. Because he was like, dude, I'm dropping my stuff down, and they're running away from it. And then he called me, and he's like, bro. He said, Broseph. He's like, Broseph, they eat that color. And I was like, I know. It's weird, isn't it? So then we had some overnight, and it was just a confidence color. They might have eaten, you know, Aaron's Magic or Morning Dawn or something, but I stuck with that Morning Sunrise color.
Could you guys throw the A-rig?
Yes.
Did anybody throw it?
I know. I talked to one of the boys that was FLW Tour guy. weigh in. So we were in the bag line, and he had Kurt Mitchell. He had a really nice bag. He had 14 pounds something. He told me that he caught them all in a rig, and he had like 30 spots. They would eat it. Wow. So I thought he's going to go off on them in this event, and he had the same thing happen as a lot of the rest of us did. No show on day two. That place really seemed to be. It was odd how many of the guys from the top fell as far as they did on day two.
Yeah, I didn't feel comfortable with the A-rig because where I was fishing, I wasn't seeing the amount of bait that I wanted to see. Like, you could go in certain areas of the lake and see a bunch of the striper guys pulled up on the bank.
Yeah.
I talked to you about this, about, you know, I probably saw three or four striper guys like holding up 4-pound smallmouth, and when they do, their first thing they do is they look around to see if there's some idiot bass fishing, and they whistle and they like to hold it up and have their clients be like, look, giant smallmouth. Agreed?
Yeah.
And you just are like, yeah. So I was like, so I tried to find that, but I was never around enough bait to where I thought they were keying on it.
Well, yeah. The big thing there is, and they do it a lot, the locals, is it's really big to fish. It's almost like shiner fishing in Florida, but they fish with live
alewives.
Yep. On a hook for smallmouth.
I mean, I watch not, it. They just put it on a ball sinker and they just chuck
yep.
it out.
Yep. Yeah, so they're fishing for smallmouth with live bait there a lot.
All right, Andy in Indiana wants to know, do you think it's scent and the different colored baits that make success?
No, it's location. I mean, the different colored baits, I think, help me in my head more than anything else, but it's a location deal. Right. I just was around.
What about you, Bradley?
I'm not a big color guy. I would not have been
ordered. How about that. Scent? Scent important?
Man, I've seen times that I felt like it was. It seems like in the spring, I have noticed or felt like it was, but it's probably just like color, you know.
Huh.
It doesn't hurt anything. let's put it that way. I've never felt like scent hurt something.
WD-40, you remember that?
Yeah, I remember people talking about using WD-40 for scent. I think I tried that.
Did you ever do the Alka-Seltzer deal?
Yeah, I've definitely done the Alka-Seltzer.
You really deal. Have?
Yeah, and it works.
So you put you stuff the Alka-Seltzer tablet in a tube?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just break off a piece of it. Put it in the tube. Now, the only place that I've used it is sight fishing.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was thinking he was going to say Erie or something.
No,
or
Table Rock.
I've used a sight fishing on bed fish that just wouldn't act right. Slip that in there. And, you know, does it work? I don't know. But it dang sure makes it pop.
Make a noise or bubble trail?
Both. Yeah, totally different.
It's pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah. All right. Frank in Michigan and several other people want to know, have you decided what you're going to do in 2020?
Yeah, I have. I've known for a while what I was going to do, and obviously everyone has got a different rhyme or reason. It's been a really tough decision, I can tell you that. It wasn't easy. Remember we talked about the shingles the first time I was in here when all this went down. But here's the bottom line. I mean, this is a mature 40-year-old version of it because that's what it actually boils down to. I've been around for a long time, and I've done a lot of different things and fished from coast to coast. At the end of the day, what matters to me most is what I'm the most interested in, and I have personally zero interest, and I mean zero interest, in fishing MLF style format. At the end of the day, that is my number one deal. I have zero interest. I mean, I'm a lot like a lot of the fans that don't care for it. I have no interest in competing in it. So to take 2 years and spend my money to qualify or try to qualify for an MLF makes no – I mean, I understand because they're going to say, well, the FLW Tour is not set up that way. And it's not.
Right.
But that is a feeder system to what the
– Right. The MLF.
The pinnacle of where you want to be.
BPT.
Right. No entry fees, BPT. And I have zero interest in that format. I do believe personally that that format will change. But I think it's going to take time. And I'm 44 years old. I don't have 15 years for it to change. That's my biggest hang up front, is I have zero interest in that format. Then there's a lot of other things, you know, that you weigh back and forth, but for the most part, they all lead me to the same spot. So the opens are such a bad deal. I mean, let's just call it for what it is. I mean, what Bass has out there for the opens, it's not attractive. It's not good. The only thing that they dangle that is attractive on the deal is the classic win, and you're in. But the fact that they are only taking four to qualify for the Elite Series out of 200, 250 boat field that we'll probably have at the Eastern at the first one is like less than 2% of the field will qualify for the Elite Series. You're only offering two divisions, and the two divisions, when you call them divisions, And you call one a central. I mean, this is back to where are we in Oklahoma? We're the Southwest. We're the central, right? Because the central is from New York to Florida over there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a national tour schedule is what that is. And it costs national tour schedule money to travel it. I understand the entry fees are not, but the travel schedule is.
Right.
You know, there needs to be more divisions than that, and it needs to be more regionally located to be a true regional event. And the paybacks are terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that you're going to travel that deal and make money unless you win. You know? If you win one, yeah. And so the options that were placed in front of us, because, I mean, there's a lot of guys, and I'm speaking for guys in my position, right? Mm-hmm. We're not MLF guys. We didn't get – I'm not saying that somebody's mad about it. I mean, we were at FLW doing our deal and enjoying ourselves and having a good time, right?
Right.
That has changed, and I have no problem with the fact that things change. I mean, that's life. Things change, and they're hard. But guys in my position are definitely put in between two choices, and they have to make one of those choices, even though there's going to be things about both sides that you don't like, and you have to pick. And so at the end of the day, for me, chasing five fish and trying to get trophies, you know, I talked to a friend of mine that's one of the owners at MLF, and, you know, he wanted to know my opinion on it. And I was like, dude, you have four blue trophies. You know, at the end of the day, I have two black ones. I can no longer chase cups or black trophies, but I could go over there and chase blue trophies, and that excites me. And at my age, as long as I've been doing this, I need some type of internal motivation that does excite me to get up and go do it, and that still excites me.
We had this talk, and you called, and you're kind of deciding. And I'm not saying I'm deciding, but I was like, dude, for you to fish at your best, you got to be 100% in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we you can't do. Be 95% in. I said, and if you are 95% in on the FLW Pro Circuit because of how much success you've had over there, the family atmosphere that they had there, the tour, the friendly schedule that they've had the last couple years.
Right.
I said, is that equivalent to being 100% in on the opens, where you know you're not going to be fishing for $100,000, you're taking a bigger risk on your career to get back to the Elite Series?
That's a big part of it, a lot of guys don't realize. And you know, and I've talked to all of my sponsors about this. I mean, the reality of what some of us are being put back into, which is fine. I mean, that's what this deal is competition. But the reality is, some of the guys are going to stay put at the FLW tour because they feel like that keeps their status with sponsors, that they're on a quote pro tour.
Right.
I don't know that it's going to be seen that way 3-4 years from now. We're all stuck at what I believe is a AAA level. That's what it is. That's my opinion. I believe that both of them are AAA. One of them you're paying $5,000 inch for, and the other one you're not. But that's what they're perceived. And so you obviously, whether you're fishing that one or the opens, you're trying to get to the next level. I mean, that's what has to be done.
So, Andy, hang on a second. Andy in Indiana wants to know, why not fish the FLW events and decline going to MLF? If you made it into those top 10 or whatever the number is.
Andy, entry fees are $40,000. Why would you turn down free entry fees? No one in their right mind would do that.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
I'm going to the opens.
What are you fishing? What?
I have to go to the opens. I have to put my head down. I have to fish both divisions, and I have to do everything I can do possibly on this planet to finish in that top four at the end of the year.
So did you lose all your sponsors then?
No, I did not.
They're all good with it.
I've got one that I'm still in conversation with that is thinking about it, or they're just not returning my email, one or the other.
But everyone else is good with it? You're
everyone
fishing
else is,
eight opens starting in January in
that
Florida?
Is correct. Yep. Yep, start in Florida in January. And like I say, I mean, it's going to be all hands on deck and try to get things done. But at the end of the day, I'll be very motivated when I wake up in January to go fishing, too.
You've caught a few in Florida before.
Caught a couple in Florida.
If I remember.
Just a few.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. Hey, Jay in Illinois wants to know, Matt, do you think that the BPT schedule, the fact that they're going to big bass lakes, is kind of to diminish the influence of the little fish syndrome? Do you think they purposely did that, went to bigger fish lakes?
I think
next year,
last year's schedule was a miracle that last year's schedule got put together, because as people at the BPT have stated, they were putting it together as they went.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were hearing stages that were announced a month, 2 months before the stages. So just to get lakes that they could fish on last year, I think they were focused on finding lakes that they could get the guys on and get scheduled and have people there. And the fishing was secondary to getting the schedule.
And if they had communities that were willing to pay, that was just bonus last year.
This year, I definitely think that they sat down and said, we need to have some big fish lakes on this. Now, here's what we'll find very interesting. They had Big Fish Lake last year. They went to Chickamauga.
Mm-hmm.
They caught some big fish, but it was one on small fish.
Yeah.
They're going to these big fish lakes. And outside of their return to North Carolina, the Sharon Harris and all that, where they're, I don't think, are small fish.
I was wondering that, too. Is there any small fish
in that
lake?
This is where the rubber meets the road on this, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this, and I've seen it on the schedule. They're going to a lot of lakes with a lot of big fish that typically in a five-fish format would take 21 to 25 pounds a day to win. Will these 80 anglers target those fish that do exist for a larger average, or will we see... Because these are healthy fisheries that they have on the schedule next year. Will we see pound and a half to 2.5 pounders dominate and supersede the big fish that they hope, I think, these guys are going to catch?
Right.
And I think it's very interesting because now you have guys who have fished for the big fish last year that got their ass kicked.
Yeah.
And you've seen posts about changing your format, your style and that. So it'll be interesting to see... On a healthy fishery that has the big fish, you know, not like a table rock where a 4 or 5 pounder is big, will those play more of a role, or will you see a shift in strategy where there's a healthy population of the keepers to where that'll still play more of a role?
You know, I was a little, I don't know what the right term is, disappointed the fact that when you have field size of 40 boats when you split up the days, that they didn't go to some lakes that really could have showcased
more unknown lakes.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Obviously, they're going to communities where the communities are willing to pay because, as we have said on this show numerous times, it doesn't matter what organization it is, they're looking to get that revenue created from the communities, be it the chamber, sports commissions, whatever it is. That helps determine where those locations are going to be. Here's the challenge with one. They're going to Okeechobee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
I think so. I'm trying to pull it up at this computer.
I'm sorry.
Though I rebooted, it's still rather...
I'm working on it, okay?
Slow, Mark.
I'm sorry.
You would think that with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 monitors you have over there, you could get at least just a 10-inch monitor
that would work on
something faster than a snail's pace.
Golly, man, I'm working on it. Anyway... If
it's like
Okeechobee,
watching Cliff Pace fish a jig over here. That's about the speed of my computer.
Anyway, Okeechobee, as you know, Bradley, is brutal for cell service.
Yes.
So the challenge that they're going to have, now I know they have all these boosters and everything, but that is going to be an enormous challenge from a streaming standpoint because of the way that the cell service is at Okeechobee. The other thing is it's going to be interesting to see if they make any changes to the actual presentation of the guys. And what I mean is, are they going to have the giant facade stage and all this and everything and the guys driving through? Obviously, when you have a two-hour delay, hour and a half, not delay, but time gap in between when the final buzzer goes off and then they do this post-game thing, I think they lost a lot of people, and I don't think a whole lot of people were watching that drive-through thing. So it's going to be interesting to see if they make any changes
on
that.
Here it is. This will prove my point. Brad, Lake Eufaula, Alabama, a lot of big fish, a lot of pound-and-a-halfers?
Yeah.
Okeechobee. Florida's Florida. You're going to
tons of 12-inchers.
Yeah, you catch a
not
big
even
one big
close.
One. Lake Fork, a lot of big fish.
A lot of little fish.
A lot of two-pounders.
So what happens, when they're there, is they'll drop shot.
It's March 13th or 18th.
They won't drop shot in March.
Will they be on the beds then?
Yeah, absolutely.
But there'll be a ton of one and a half to two, three pounders.
There'll be
some big ones caught, too.
Could be dead on. Yeah. Could be dead on the spawn.
Then they go back to North Carolina.
But here, this is what happened last time we watched the spawn. They fished the spawn during Chickamauga.
Yeah.
And so then you end up with a group of stump file that has a lot bucks. Of male fish in it, mm-hmm. bucks, and then you just go in a circle and you continue to catch them over and over and over, even though it's the same fish. By the time you make that circle, it's like 10 minutes later, and most people aren't even noticing you're catching the same fish.
Yeah.
But you're just going around catching for 3 or 4 days.
I think technically they're not allowed to catch the same fish twice if it's obviously the same bed fish.
Right. But, I mean, if you're pitching to stumps, you don't know. I mean, they're just dark stumps. You know they're on beds next to the stumps.
I
you
pitch,
drop a shot over there, and you go around the circle.
Yeah. Jordan Fall, Sharon Harris. All right, we're going to have a bunch of 5-pounders because there's no little fish in that lake. Kissimmee chain in May. Is that a shell bed deal?
Kissimmee chain's loaded right now, dude. It's the best thing in.
Yeah.
That one will be an interesting one. Then, so you got to give him credit for this.
I'm sorry. Kissimmee chain, no. I'm thinking of Harris. Kissimmee chain in May, dude, it still can be big fish. But there's so many little fish offshore in that place.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Lake Winnebago, Lake Butte, Demorts, and Green Lake in Knee-High, Wisconsin. All right. That's a cool little switch up.
Now, the St. Lawrence River, they're catching big ones.
That's well, I know, but can you not catch a bunch of 2 to 3 pound? Can you not go in those grass mats in the St. Lawrence River when it's in the end of June and throw a frog and spend 10 seconds catching a 2 pound largemouth and reeling it in on a frog and getting it out there as opposed to spending 6 minutes on a 3 pound smallmouth on the river?
So would you agree that part of the strategy and part of the intrigue is what are they going to do? Are they going to go for bigs or are they going to go for
Lake
numbers?
Champlain.
Champlain's going to be little ones.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You're going to see a lot of interesting stuff this year with
those
it
guys,
on familiar
some
fisheries.
Some of those bridges and stuff at Champlain with current. I mean,
the blow-throughs on Champlain?
Yeah.
It's just 15-inch after 15-inch, isn't it?
Well, I would.
Well, they did one. You remember they had an event there, and there, it was over on the Connecticut side.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Burlington, Connecticut? Is that right? Burlington, New Hampshire?
I don't recall this.
Yeah, it was one of the shows, and they were sitting there fishing the riprap. They just kept switching. Bobby Lane was fishing it, and then somebody else was fishing. I can't remember.
So have you already started prep for January? I mean, we're talking a little bit over a month and a half away.
No.
You need some time off after this year or what?
Man, I did a lot of fishing this year.
You did?
Yeah. And it wasn't the best year that I've ever had by any means. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Most of these places are places that I've been. I'll start prepping and working, but it's not going to be today.
How do you analyze a year? You've been doing this a long time. You've been, like, I guess, would you say really serious about it the last 4 years again?
Yeah.
Like, you get done with a year. You talk about the top tens. Like, how do you analyze a year instead of – because I feel like
– to me, it's about money.
Okay.
I mean, that's the bottom line, right?
Did you hear that, Matthew?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean – honestly, what did that $20,000 do for you last week?
Made my year.
All right.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? That's the deal. It's about money at the end of the day, right? You didn't finish in the top five or whatever, you know, we thought you were going to get. Mm-hmm. But that $20,000 made that a whole lot better, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a third place with $20,000 really made my year. If it was a third place with $3,000, I'd be like, I didn't embarrass myself.
Now, with that being said, you can't ever count on, I mean, even Brian Thrift will tell you this, you can't count on wins. I mean, he says that himself, and he's right. You can't count on that. I mean, you need some stability throughout the year. But at the end of the day, he's just like us. It's about the money.
Yeah. Hey, Joe in Florida wants to know, have you decided what you're going to do next year, Matthew?
Yeah, I found a co-angler for the Central Open, so it just depends if I can get into that with the co-angler. I think those are going to be slammed, and then depending on how things go and how several things shake out, I've always been an equal opportunity guy. I am considering the Plains division of the FLW series, which would be Lake of the Ozarks, the end of March, May, Table Rock, and then in the middle of the year, Dardanelle.
Mm-hmm.
All close. I considered to do all 8 of the Opens, and dude, I'm not in a position to do that even after winning $20,000 in the last one. That's a long way to drive up to
That's my complaint.
New York,
that's what I was saying.
And back
yeah.
and South Carolina yeah. and back yeah. and Florida and back and yeah. then be ready to start in January. And then you have back-to-backs in there and all right. that. So, I mean, I called you and asked you about it. And
yeah.
Although I think that would be – if my ultimate goal is to make the Elite Series, that would be the move that I have to do. But I also am not willing to – put myself in jeopardy to do it. I've seen way too many guys who have done it and they're done after 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of build on what happened this year and, you know, have a 7-8 tournament schedule. Also have the Bass Nation Regional that's on Toledo Bend in the end of May. I want to fish the U.S. Open in November. I want to get back and maybe fish a couple team tournaments. I've really missed fishing some of those Nichols and Skeeter team tournaments in Oklahoma. I mean, those are fun. Mm-hmm. You sit there, I mean, you're on them, you're out there with your buddy, he's I got a big one, and you're like, oh my gosh.
And I think qualifying wise, I mean, it's smart. I mean, it's the way to go about it. It's where you're just you're doing the things that you want to do and fishing the schedules that make sense to you, and qualifying for an Elite Series or BPT, whatever, it'll come, you know, but it comes in the flow of just doing your deal, just like what you're talking about with the schedule that you're talking about, and not forcing something by trying to do two divisions of an open and, you know, do things that you know that don't make sense for you.
What are the entry fees for the opens? Do you remember?
$1,700.
No, this is a mathematical deal that I've kind of done in my head. You know, if you look at BPT as being the ultimate goal there, or the Elite Series, is the entry fees at FLW Tour are going to be $40,000. And so, and you're going to have to do it for 2 years because of the contracts and stuff that they have with guys. So they're going to take the top 10 after 2 years off of the FLW Tour into the BPT. That's going to cost $80,000 for 10 spots. The Open, in reflection, if they're taking 12 people through the two divisions, and then they're taking the four out of the two that compete in both. 12, and I think the math is 14,000 total, maybe 14.8, some 14.5. Let's say 14.5 and call it that. So you're looking at 29,000 for 24 spots, or 80,000 for 10 spots.
Right.
That's the math I did in my head. That's another reason that I've chose what I have.
All right. Dwayne wants to know, hey, you want to run out to Thunderbird today?
Oh,
they'd
no.
He'd probably be biting.
Man, we can't tell you guys how bad the weather is out there. I mean, it is. I mean, literally blowing gust 50 to 60 miles an hour out of the north and raining.
They'd be biting.
You think they would?
Oh, 100%. You know what? I mean, in college, when it was like this time of the year, I would go walk the dam.
Dude, we can go out there and catch them when it's nice. We don't have to go out there and catch them like this.
This is when you catch your megas.
I caught some sevens this summer.
I'm not trying to talk beautiful. You going in out there. I ain't doing that after.
It's freezing out
there. Because at Cumberland on day one, like, I had all the stuff on and stuff, but I was like, I'm not going to fish with gloves on. Yeah. It's the Costa Championship. Yeah. And at like 9, I'm sitting there, and I asked my co-angler, I said, hey, I'm not trying to be a wimp back here, but I just have a question. Like, can you feel your hands? And he laughed, and he goes, man, I haven't been able to feel our hands since we hit my hands since we hit that cold front about halfway down the lake.
Right.
And then my GoPro stopped working at like 11, and you know you have to pop the top of it. I literally could not get the top of the GoPro open because my fingers were not working. Mm-hmm. Now, I could put them in the gloves. I had heater, little hot hands in there and warm them up, but it would just warm them up enough to the point where they would hurt. So I went with the solid frozen all day.
Wow.
As opposed to try to keep them warm.
Yeah, that hurts.
Wow.
And then he had a 54-mile run.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right. Any interest in the new TNPFL? Did I say it right, Matthew?
The National Professional Fishing.
Hey, let's talk about this. Yeah. So, no, I haven't even looked at or had any interest in it. But we were talking before we went on air about some people, friends that we had that were interested in it. And I personally have had friends of mine that were like a lot of interest in it. And they were like, hey, man, I'm sending in my resumes. Matt was talking about some of the guys that he knew too. So there is obviously a lot of interest. I told this story before. I had a guy sitting in the living room with me months ago when all this change was about to go down, and he was like, man, it wouldn't surprise me one bit to see somebody just build up an event where they pay $100,000 first place and, you know, $5,000 entry fees and blah blah blah. And I was like, you really think there's that many people? And he's like, dude, there are people. And obviously there are. There's a lot of people with that interest to do that.
I'm just curious, Brad, your dedication and the commitment that you've made mm-hmm. to doing this professionally. Nothing's going to change from an occupation standpoint, right? I mean the focus is still
100%
on professional fishing and continuing to be a professional. You're not going to go back to the 9-to-5 world or anything like that.
No, I'm all in on this.
Is this a good time to be a professional fisherman, to be trying to make it in the professional fishing world?
No, the heydays have come and gone. You know, heydays were, you know, Peter T. and Kenyon Hill and all those guys went through, you know, some really the best times. What probably made those – and then I say that, I mean, that may not even been the best time because FLW went through a period after that period, really technically, that FLW was just booming.
With the millennium and all that, everything.
Yeah, I mean, guys, they were making so much money. Think about this. Yeah. And you will remember this. They were literally paying $1 million to the winner of Fantasy Fishing.
Yeah.
$1 million.
And Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Think about that. Yeah. So, I mean, they were making a lot of money to be able to dish out $1 million to try to build Fantasy Fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Wow. All right, Matthew, anything else, man?
No, that'll
we're
do
about
it.
Out of time.
Bradley,
yeah, great stuff. You're welcome here anytime. You know that we'll have you in, even though it's kind of the off season. Are you a hunter? Do you go kill things?
I used to. I don't even have the heart to do it anymore. I couldn't do it. But my kids like to kill them. So you know, when the rifle season comes, I take them and they'll shoot anything that walks.
Do you see them at your house? Because you kind of live out there.
Yep. Yep.
They kind of roam around a little bit.
Oh yeah, they're out in the back every day, every night as the sun goes down.
Very nice. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap things up today. Tomorrow, Randy Howell. As we continue BTL this week, and then on Wednesday, a special guest. Still working on a couple other things. And then remember, next week, Scott Canterbury, and one that I am very excited about, Mr. Larry Nixon, joining the show next week. So great stuff. All right, Matthew, anything else?
That's it.
All right, that's it. Everybody, try and stay warm. We're out of here.